Good evening, and welcome to another episode of Nigeria Politics Weekly. As usual, my name is Michael, and co-hosting with me is Phoenix. And today we have one guest. Our guest is a member of the People's Democratic Party and a university lecturer. His name is Dr. Aminu. Now we're going to be discussing three topics today. First of all, we'll discuss news reports that despite the finance minister's claims, Nigeria has borrowed about 3.8 trillion from the central bank in the last 6 months. Secondly, we'll discuss the Yahya Bello saga. It doesn't seem to be ending. There were news reports this week that he apparently paid 10 years' school fees in advance, totaling almost $845,000. And then thirdly, we'll discuss the tragedy in River State. Apparently, a gas tanker or petrol tanker exploded, leading to the deaths of many and tons of injuries and property damage. But to our first topic, Phoenix, we were here last week discussing your friend, the governor of the central bank, Yemi Cardoso, and his defense of the Naira. And you seem to be of the view that this was a temporary measure. But we then find that since that conversation, the Naira has been sliding. And now we are seeing reports that your other friend in the finance ministry, Wale Edu, has borrowed 3.8 trillion
My friend,
in the last 6 months. Can you explain to us, Phoenix, what is happening?
I like this idea that I'm walking in high powered circles. This one that the coordinating minister of the economy and CBN governor are both my friends. Hi, Michael, and thanks, Aminu, for joining us. Hello, listeners. There were those who did not expect us to do a podcast this weekend. So it's good to be able to show them that they should have some faith in us these days. Michael, there's nothing surprising about this. What would have been surprising to me would have been if we had seen evidence that Nigeria was not borrowing money. We all know the story under Buhari and how ways and means ballooned to 20 to almost 23 trillion naira. And then they got the National Assembly to agree to securitize the debt. Basically, what that meant was that they were going to convert it into long-term security and so that they could pay off the central bank. And so they sold that to the public and raised money to do so. So that reduced the balance from 20 almost 23 trillion to about 4.5 trillion naira. The reports that we are hearing is that as of end of December, it had jumped by almost 4 trillion, so 3.8 trillion to be exact. I mean, that Michael was talking about. Now, so if we're saying that that data is as of end of December, I mean, we've run another 4 months. One can only imagine how much it is today in real terms, but we'll see when that report comes out from the central bank. But I think I mean, anyone who's been watching would have expected this because we know the capacity of the federal government to raise revenue has not dramatically improved. The only thing that we have seen is because of the devaluation of the Naira and the almost harmonization of rates, they've seen Naira revenue increase significantly. So, because basically you've gone from what was the rates under Buhari, maybe around 350, 400 to 1,000, 1,200, and all those kind of things. So, you've seen dollar incomes from oil and things like that, and certain taxes increase FARC. But that's not sufficient given that the budget that they put in place is significantly higher than the budget for this year is higher than last year. But even if we're talking about the fact that this borrowing was last year, We also know that they had added some extra to the budget that Buhari had put in place for 2023. So your spending levels did not reduce, and your income generating ability has not improved. So there's somebody has to bridge the gap. And the easiest way for them, typically in their mind, is not to reduce spending and be more frugal, manage within your means. No, is to continue their largesse, which I've railed about against here, time without number. And instead, they just run to the central bank to underwrite them. So for me, I mean, it's not surprising. What is the issue for me is Cardoso, who is fighting against inflation, but continuing to support Ways and Means, and also try, and I mean, and understanding that all that he's trying to do on the monetary policy side, as we said last week, will be for naught if the fiscal side cannot get his act together. If they can neither raise revenue nor reduce their expenditure, you're going to continue having all of this money be created for federal government to just waste. And that money, with all the corruption that is around, and we'll talk about the major corruption case, will come back and chase the naira. So you see the effect on the naira. And more, and even worse, will drive price of goods and services up, which is why we continue to see inflation above 20%. So it's a vicious cycle, if I may put it that way. And it just goes to show that these guys cannot bring any improvement because they simply will not do the right thing. It is not in them, and it will stop them from the largesse that they're after.
Thank you, Phoenix. Dr. Aminu, the first question is this Ways and Means borrowing that Phoenix has described, is it legal? Because I'm sure, if I recall correctly, there was a threshold that the central bank was not allowed to exceed in granting in loans to the federal government. So is this legal, Dr. Aminu?
Yes, it is. Yeah. So let me greet our listeners, and good evening, Phoenix, as well, our listeners, and Michael. To answer your question, yes, it's legal according to Section 38 of the CBN Act of 2004. But it is only legal for the CBN to print that money, give them that overdraft, as long as it's, I think Phoenix mentioned it, it does not surpass 5% of the government revenue from the previous year. And now if we look at the government's revenue from the previous year, 2023, or if we call it 2022, which was less than 2023, it was 14 trillion naira among the three tiers of government. That is according to NAITI. The forecast for 2024 is 18 trillion naira revenue, which is over ambitious. And whichever one we're going to take, 5% is much more. And what that section also tells us is the government has to return that money within that fiscal year. And as we know, the Senate is still trying to investigate Buhari's money spending that it has done. So I don't know if you have finished asking the questions, but yeah, that is the part of the legality and the consequences there.
So in your view, Dr. Mm-hmm. Aminu, do you think the Nigerian government can pay the money back?
Thank you. If we're going to look at the history, when I say history of APC, because Nigerian government, is run by we are in a democratically elected administrations, and we are under the APC government. The 8 years of APC did not do that. That is Buhari, like I mentioned, they are still trying to investigate to know how it even went through. And if we are going to follow them and see how they are able to do it, then they cannot be able to pay it. But how are we? Can we continue to live like that? Phoenix mentioned about fighting inflation and what have not, you know. And if you look at the additional amount of money, we are talking about close to 5% of the money supply in the economy in just 6 months. And if you add 5% of money supply, basically, if we go back to conventional economics, you know, when we are talking about definition of economics, you know, growth of money supply should be equal to growth of goods and services, then we are not going to have inflation. But if that growth of money supply out is higher than growth of money, goods and services production we are talking about now, then we are going to have inflation. And where we can begin to look at it comparatively and see we will be looking at if it continues to be injected that like that, you know, we are going to see inflation, you know, just going one direction only, and this direction is how it has been going through. And the worrying thing now is we have to listen to, I mean, we always have to believe what all under work with what they have been saying. Wale Edun in at the beginning of the year said we are not going to rely on borrowing, you know, and this is borrowing, temporary borrowing, you know. He told us that we will rely on revenue generation, which means, you know, growing the economy, because if you don't grow the economy, you can generate more revenue. Is it happening? No. We saw what happened, you know, when they because for me, everything I look at, you know, he's the Minister for Finances, so he does all the fiscal policy, you know, everything goes through him there when it comes to government expenditure. And the government signed an outrageous budget of 28 trillion naira, you know. And if you look at that budget, we had about 9 trillion naira, just a little bit over 9 trillion naira deficit. And what Wale Edun told us then was there's going to be new borrowings for 7.8 trillion naira. After just few weeks earlier, he told us we can't rely on borrowing. And he told us that he's going to get them from multilateral loans. We know the Senate, the application went through Senate, you know, the rubber stamped Tinubu's 7.4 billion naira approval and about 100 million euro approval. That is all part of the external borrowing, and it should be able to finance, you know, the remaining part, especially now that, because if we look at it, looking at the budget, what did they do? They had the earmarked the dollar at 800 naira. Given the situation we're in now, you know, it has weakened and everything, you know, then that money should be able to go up and cover and get up to 9 trillion naira. But it is not happening, you know, and what we are seeing, you know, they are borrowing much more than we expect them to do, they are doing. And is becoming much more problematic. Obviously, there's a solution to this, you know, for them to reduce public spending, you know, instead of, but they dislike that. That is something they don't like to hear about. You know, they are going to monetize public assets. They are going to continue to borrow more from the central bank or from multilateral organizations, which are going to tie us down with so many policies that whether we like, or creating so many laws that we don't like in the country on the condition that they give us that, or I mean, they give us those loans. And obvious, another thing is we may end up becoming beggars, you know, going to for aid agencies or asking the multilateral agencies for grants and what have not, which requires matching funds that we usually don't we don't pay, and it ends up disappearing and gets into more corruption cases. So, to answer your question, I do not think this Tinubu government, if they print out that money, they will be able to pay it back. They will just end up securitizing it, just like what happened under Tinubu, and sorry, under Buhari. And the next government that comes in will have to bear that burden. And the worst case scenario, you know, is what is happening in Kaduna State. We have someone, you know, tied the whole finances of that state down, and we have someone that is going to investigate it. And when that investigation goes on, they are just going to sweep it under the carpet, and you know, the next trouble continues. So, it's going to come back to bite us. We don't know. I don't know when, but it will come back to bite us. I don't know. Phoenix, our generation is going to be. There will be trouble. So I don't know if I keep quiet from here.
Thank you, Dr. Aminu. I'm going to go to Phoenix and I need to come. I'll come back to you after that. But Phoenix, my question to you is, I'm sure you saw over the past few days, there's been this debate on social media about how some of you are not wishing the president well and you're wishing the president should fail. So in the spirit of constructive advice, what would you recommend that they do? Because surely we can't just keep engaging in this ways and means, the borrowing, without no plan to generate revenue. So how would you solve this revenue deficit that Mr. Wale Edu seems to be facing?
Michael, I mean, anyone who, I mean, think about it in, yeah, I always think about this in P&L terms. There are two sides to any, okay, let me not call it, let me not say P&L. Let's just say, even as individuals that budget, right? There are two sides to your budget. You budget for income that you know will come in, and you budget for expenditure that you have to have. On the expenditure side, you know the things that are discretionary and non-discretionary. What do I mean? There are things that you're already locked into, like you need a home, so you pay rent. You have children, so you have school fees. You have to pay utility bills and so on and so forth. Those are non-discretionary because you have to. I mean, you're not going to go and sleep on the street, and you're not going to have your children out of school, so you. But you can make choices even within the non-discretionary thing. So instead of going to rent an apartment in Banana Island, you can choose to rent it in Gbagada so that, I mean, it matches your income and so on. And you can put your children in schools that are not. So you can manage that side of your budget. The discretionary things, like whether you choose to buy a Toyota or you go and take a Benz or whether you go holiday within Nigeria to Ikogusi, Warm Springs, or you decide to go abroad, those are discretionary. On the income side, you already know how much you are going to earn. You know what your paycheck is. What you try to do is to create opportunities for yourself to earn more. So maybe, add a few degrees, ask for promotion, get a move to a bigger job so that that revenue side can grow. Let's bring it home to Nigeria. So what has been expected, and what I said months ago to Mr. Ibrahim is there are two things that you have to do. You have to grow Nigeria's revenue base. Yes, he mouths off all of the data that all of us have known for the last decade. Yes, Nigeria's revenue is less than 10% of GDP. Yeah, we all know that. And we know it's low. But nobody has been doing the work to get it up. And the work that you're going to do to get it up is not going to happen overnight, but start the building blocks now. So you must, do the right things. And what are those right things? You have to enable the economy to truly grow and remove all the shackles that Buhari did that stunted the economy and led to negative growth and led to unemployment, border closures, bans here and there. So that was why when they started to When CBN removed the ban on items and did some work to remove the multiplicity of rates, those were steps in the right direction. You needed to continue to go further to make sure that, in that space, people felt comfortable to invest. So that on the income side, the things that you needed to do on taxation, which will bring in additional revenue can then begin to take hold. In that time when your revenue is still constrained and when you need time to, just like any human being, before you get the next job and you start seeing the money rolling in, you have to, as they say, cut your coat according to your cloth. You need to live within your means. So it meant that your spending needed to be reduced significantly. at least your your discretionary spending. On the non-discretionary, you needed to look at the structure of that spending and make sure that you can make some changes. But what did they do? Tinubu ended up appointing 45 ministers, even when the constitution only requires him to do 36. So, for every minister, they have their retinue, they have ministries that you created, and all of those kinds of things, even when you did not have the money to pay them salaries. We saw all the junketing up and down, all the jamborees from Unga to Dubai to this. We've not seen any attempt by this government, and especially by Edun, who is in effect the CFO, and any right-thinking CFO in this scenario will be going to cut costs and say, guys, if you don't cut costs and you don't have the money, you're going to be borrowing. And if you don't want to borrow, you have to reduce your spending. There has been no attempt to do that. And so there's nothing that these guys show that tell you that they can do it. So if you ask me, what should they be doing? It's those things that I told them months ago when they got into office, they needed to do. Go and reduce your spending. As a first step, reduce your spending to the barest minimum to at least control that. Then do all you can to enable revenue. They had this committee led by Taiwo Oyedele that was supposed to look at tax reforms and all those kinds of things. Good ideas, which have always been in space. I'm sure I wrote a something on taxes maybe about 8 years ago at the beginning of Buhari's regime about how we needed to rebalance our taxes. Nigeria is a country where you have corporate income tax that is higher than the top rate of your personal income tax. It makes no sense. You need to rebalance it. Our personal income tax at the top end doesn't tax, people who earn above a certain income enough. What you need to do is to rebalance it, and even somehow, and I support that, have so suggested that you should have a progressive income tax rate for corporates, which you top off at no higher than 20%, but you bring it down such that, the smaller companies, you can catch them into the net easier to pull in the revenue. And then for personal income tax, you expand it at the top end so that higher income earners should be paying more in the 30, 35, 40% range. Let's say if you're for anything you're earning, let's say above 10 million, rebalance it so it makes sense for your actual economy. So some of those things we haven't seen come into play. It's all platitudes. Some have come in, but you're not doing enough. So for me, you need to do on both sides if you truly want to fix it. They're going to be a one year in office in a month, and you really don't see them showing any signs of, ready to do the right thing on one hand and having the intelligence to do what's necessary, because the revenue side is always the most difficult. It's always harder to earn more money. So, and that requires intellect. I see Aminu's hand up.
Thank you, Phoenix, for your constructive advice to Mr. Edu. Now, I'm actually coming to Aminu. So, Aminu, your hand is up, I gather. But before that, I've got a question for you, which is, the PDP says it's the main opposition party in the legislature. So the question that I presume ordinary Nigerians are asking is, all these financial shenanigans are taking place under your party's watch. So, what level of accountability or what level of scrutiny are they conducting in the Senate and the House of Representatives, Dr. Aminu?
Right. I think we're going to let that question answer itself, because as we have seen the PDP, we have some group of House of Reps calling themselves in G60, they were more concerned about the PDP leadership or the National Working Committee instead of performing proper opposition, opposing this the government in that chamber. Which I think is very laughable. You know, I wish if they were, if they would have been taken seriously if they were actually not rubber stamping everything Tinubu sent to them. Similarly, in the Senate, we also we can't deny how Nengi, you know, went out, you know, and began did his so he did his bid there for the House of Reps. They are all jokers, I'm sorry to say. No disrespect to anyone who refused to get involved, I mean who got involved, but I believe the whole opposition there, they collected as Phoenix mentioned, you know, they all collected those jeeps, you know, which increased to our expenditure and what have not. They all collected that money for palliative, which never hardly reached the common man, and it's not even the right thing to do. That was not how PDP was planning to conduct their fuel subsidy removal policy, and they shamelessly collected it and looked the other way. So there's no opposition, but we saw Senator Nengi. He made an attempt. They suspended him for 3 months, and it was surprising and shameful to the other PDP members in the Senate. All of them went out, you know, and raised their hands and said no, they can't get involved. We saw one PDP member, I think, from Akwa Ibom State, that was even saying, "Don't put me in, don't bring wahala to me on Arise TV," you know, which is very laughable. And I'm not sure if he's a PDP member, but he's one of those senators. So I understand, you know, there is some kind of autocracy going on in that Senate. You know, there's a lot of bullying ongoing, but I do not think as a serious opposition party, as we claim to be, we should continue to move in that direction. And, you know, but people, we get to hear people's voices, you know, on things that because that is what matters most, you know. And if they were doing what matters, the National Working Committee or the National Executive Council of PDP would have taken them very much seriously. But what we know is when they threatened to withdraw, they said, well, anybody that you see resigning from PDP doesn't even have the constituents' support. That is why they are actually leaving. So I am disappointed to a certain degree, you know, that they are not performing the opposition they are supposed to be doing, and they are trying to push it onto the National Working Committee. No, it is you that is in that chamber that is supposed to be opposing, raising motions, you know, to oppose these things, but all of them are all quiet. The only person that tried to speak, you know, was shut down, and everybody, you know, just followed, you know, like sheep. It's surprising. So yeah, that is my opinion on that.
Thank you, Dr. Aminu. Well, hopefully you can rescue your party and it then resumes its role as an opposition party alongside the Labour Party. But anyway, to our next topic. Phoenix, Governor Yahaya Bello is in the news again. A side note, but I was in the gym this morning, exercising, trying to lose some weight. And a song came on that I'd never heard before by a musician apparently called Davido. The song is called For the Road. And I'm not usually a fan of all these Afrobeats kind of music, but even I was shocked at how good the song was. But he was singing about One for the Road, whatever that means. But I presume this applies to the Yahaya Bello case. He decided to take one for the road, one last dip into the treasury by taking, was it $1 million and paying his children's school fees? So anyway, I don't know how we diverted into Afrobeats, but yes. Anyway, so Phoenix, yeah. So what's happening with Yahaya Bello? $1 million for his children's school fees? Is that how they do? Was that a one for the road looting just before he left office, Phoenix?
Well, first of all, I mean, I'm always impressed when you expand your Afrobeats knowledge. I'm happy because it's also one a song that I really like. It's very catchy, so I can see why it piqued your interest. As to what he meant by one for the road, well, I'll leave that to our listeners to sh to share to share and advice. But I like the way you've used it with Yaya Bello. One knows how many ones for the road he did, because it looks like he was caught on this particular one. But you can never tell how many times he dipped his hand in his hand into the Kogi treasury, as sparse as that was. But it just tells you what our politicians are there for. I mean, they're not there to improve the lot of people. They're not there. Even if you're a callous person, at least even think about, how do you leave something better than how you met it? How do you move the polity forward? How do you get it? It's
Are you there, Phoenix? If
Yeah, I'm here.
not,
I'm here.
oh.
So to it was an incredible story, but I mean, very quickly people, could see the what he had tried to do. Apparently he had paid school fees for his children, in dollars, for I think he had paid in advance for 10 years or something like that, to the tune of about $800,000. And of course, what people I don't know if that had already happened, but what I saw being explained was, typically this thing will be done. You make the payment in advance. Of course, you'd be able to show the school would accept it, and then he would simply go to the school and ask for a refund at some point. And then they will refund him, and of course the money enters the US in a pseudo okay manner that he can then use for other things. But at least the EFCC got on his trail and has the paperwork, and we can see that the chairman of the EFCC is very much invested in this, and keen to bring Yaya Bello to book. And ensure that he doesn't get away with this. The question is how they'll be able to capture him and make sure that he faces his day in court, seeing that the man has refused to show up and he has been declared wanted, a fugitive. Makes it all the more interesting. I actually saw a meme where somebody showed Yaya Bello in female Nigerian traditional attire, and was just making a PSA that in case anyone sees someone like this at the airports, they should know that it's Yaya Bello, reminiscent of the late Governor Alamisi, who apparently escaped wearing Nigeria female cap. Trust Nigerians to find something funny in everything.
No, thank you for this, Phoenix. Dr. Aminu, I recently discovered that you're also a columnist in the Daily Trust, which is one of the Northern Nigeria's most prominent newspapers. So, from a Northern perspective, is there outrage that Kogi State, one of the states in Nigeria that has a low educational outcomes, dilapidated schools, teachers who've not been paid apparently for 2 years? Is there outrage that the governor decided to spend £1 million educating his children at the American International School in Abuja?
There is talk about it, but there is no outrage, to the best of my knowledge and from the temperature that I'm measuring. And there is a reason for that, because we've seen worse. Why am I saying Nigeria has seen worse, not just in the north, and I'll give you an example. 750 million, $750,000. Dollars, comparatively, it's a small amount. It's a small amount of money. We have a former governor, Yaya Bello's mate, El-Rufai, that is bragging about $100 million. That he has $100 million to start a business. We all know where that money comes from. We are talking about governors, that spend $100,000, on an SUV and things like that. They buy cars. The 750 million thousand dollars, we are just talking about a billion, of them. Yeah, below. But what I would have been worried about, when it comes to Yahaya Bello's situation is his state capture, the capture of that state, And this takes me back to when Phoenix was talking about reducing number of state workers, or I mean ministers by Tinubu. One person, you don't have to reduce the number of ministers, but you have to re reduce the number of money that you give to this kind of people. Yahaya Bello, standing as he is now, will be able to recoup that $750,000 10 times under this particular governor that he has held captive. We all heard what Wike was demanding from Fubara, other past governors. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying 750, that they shouldn't steal $10, they shouldn't take $10 that is people's money. But comparatively, what they are doing, and how things now move in trillions in Nigeria, I think this is, especially within the elite circle, this is just a laughable, it's just something, that you wouldn't take seriously. And even with the EFCC, eventually, they are just trying to find a distraction. And to come back to one of your jokes, Michael, that I came across, it's just Yahaya Bello's account, it's not his own, it's not Yahaya Bello himself. So EFCC should just worry, just like what they did to Tinubu on his account in America. And I came across one corruption case in Spain, a few years ago, when they gave one of the ministers a Jaguar, and his excuse, they gave his wife a Jaguar actually, and his excuse was Jaguar is an ugly car. We shouldn't be worrying about that. So this is basically what the temperature is in the north. $750,000 dollars. We've had so many huge, massive cases. But for me personally, I worry about his state capture of Ododo. And that is where we should find a way, just like how we divorced Erufai with the current governor, we should find a way to divorce Yahaya Bello and Ododo. And just like what happened with Wike and Fubara, we will have sanity, because one person alone, it will be worse than 45 appointees if they were given a decent amount of salary. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Aminu. Phoenix, on this Yahaya Bello saga, I'm trying to understand something. And it's a philosophical question that a number of people on social media have raised as well, that what really do these people intend to do with all this money? Because when you think about it, even if you had five or six kids, okay, you steal $2 million, $3 million, you buy a house, one in London, one in America, one in Abuja, you put them in school. Why do you need more than that? Like, what else are they? What do they do with this money, Phoenix? Maybe you might know. What is it? Womanizing? Is it pepper soup they buy? Is it, I don't know, point and kill fish? What do they do with all this
Michael,
money?
how will I know? Because I'm not a politician. I'm not close to any politician. So I hear you. But no, but you raise an excellent point, and one that I've always pondered ever since I became politically conscious and just saw the spate of corruption in the country and just felt. And then you look at the scale of corruption and the kinds of amounts that people, help themselves to, and you're like, but what dawned on me was these guys were in politics because they did not see any other way to be productive, right? These are not people who have created businesses, who know how to turn around capital, right? And so their intent is to steal enough such that they will never need to work another day, and their family members will not need to work another day. And so they steal to acquire property in the hope that, you know, the property store value, and they're not looking to create viable ventures that can, you know, turn the money around multiple times from there. And that's, I mean, what Yaya Bello, I mean, if Yaya Bello left government without stealing this $1 million, he probably would be broke in 6 months. Because again, their politics and the way they play their politics, you know, paying for loyalty, paying for protection because they've done dastardly things. This is somebody who's well known for violence and all of those kind of things. You know, to maintain that lifestyle outside of public office means that you no longer have the treasury to fund you. So you need a war chest to do so, and to remain relevant. Now, this is not me condoning what they are doing. This is me saying what they are doing is despicable to the lowest degree. I mean, these kinds of people should be nowhere near public office because they offer nothing. They offer nothing, and they take, and they are like leeches, and like leeches, they need to be destroyed. And so when Aminu says the connection between Yaya and Ododo needs to be severed, this is how it has to be severed. It has to be severed by this guy being brought to book and sent to jail. One, that will break the hold he has on Ododo, because at least he will be behind bars and obviously should not have any hold on him again. Two, it should send a message to the current governor that, you know, you do the same, same thing will happen to you. And perhaps from there, you know, we begin to have better outcomes, you know, with these politicians that are in office. But there is a poverty mindset in the hearts of politicians in this country and across the rank and file. There is a mindset that knows that they cannot amount to anything on their own, and so they must siphon as much as possible to keep them in the life of luxury and wealth that they are now accustomed to. You know, they've gotten to these places, they are now going to fancy places, they are jumping on private jets, coming away from that without, you know, having a means to sustain that is a problem for them.
Thank you, Phoenix. Dr. Aminu, final question on this topic is for you. It's a two-part question. The first part relates to the politics of the situation. In your view, do you think there's a political reason why the EFCC is targeting Yaya Bello? So that's the first part of the question. And the second part is people have criticized the theatrical way the EFCC has been going about this prosecution. The chairman of EFCC is holding press conferences, threatening to retire if Yaya Bello is not prosecuted. So that's part of my first question. And the second question relates to the school. A few people have attacked the American International School and said, why would they accept $1 million up front or $845,000 up front from someone like Yaya Bello? And they've generally then said, why, how many other corrupt politicians have their kids in that school? Or why is that school, an American school, accepting their fees in the first place? Shouldn't they have rejected the children of people like Yaya Bello because of corruption? So how do you respond to these two broad issues, Dr. Aminu?
Thank you for that. I think if we look at the political reason behind it or the media trial behind it, we all know how Yaya Bello was hell-bent on contesting against Tinubu. And in fact, there's a video going about, saying he should be dealt with or Tinubu is going to deal with him. Then we know how vindictive this our president is, which is quite petty, and some will think of him as very strategic. Yaya Bello is a person who he calls himself a lion. I don't know why he calls himself a lion or an animal, but he sees himself as a fearless person or as a very dominating figure, like a lion. White in that color itself, that means he also is a person who is very ambitious. Cool Ganduje be behind him as well, to make sure that that is not going to happen. But whatever they are going to be doing, if he's vying for the APC chairmanship, they are just vying for that for a very short period, because there's going to be a, they have to they are just going to complete the Abdoulaye Adamo's tenure. Now, this whole media trial, I believe, is a distraction. Why am I saying it's a distraction? Because for me, I believe the $1 billion we are talking about, sorry, 1 billion naira or 800 or 700 or 800 million $1,000 that they are talking about. Yaya Bello, back in 2017, he built a 2 billion naira house. Nobody is questioning that. EFCC is also trying him for 18 billion naira, corruption case. Nobody is talking about that, but we are picking on this one. I know the, I mean, my wife is from Kogi State, so I have that connection with Kogi State. I know the people deserve to get that money, but I believe, because for me, I find everything doubtful about the whole APC government, and they love their theaters, they love their dramas. There is definitely something that is ongoing that they are misguiding us with this whole drama of Yaya Bello. And this is why I said, if they were talking about 100 billion naira, I will take it very seriously. But for them to be talking about things like that, And now to your second question with the ethical reason on American International School. That school, I think if I were EFCC, the first thing I will be thinking about is not them just refunding the money. And look at how swiftly they return that money, which tells you that these people are quite liquid. Any school that I know, if you request such humongous amount of money from certain schools in the UK, it has to go through a lot of checks, probably through Board of Governors and what have not. It's not like they won't give you, but if they were going to collect it, they would have gone through a lot of vetting. Then going out too will have to go through that. But they quickly returned it, which tells you, they are a complicit entity. And I mean, look at what they did to this Chinese company. They quickly locked it up and did a lot of things because it violated the legal code of the country. This is something that is very, very troubling in our country. First of all, they are even collecting dollars, which they shouldn't do according to the CBN regulation. And they did not even, what is it, where is it, their Money Laundering Act, and how are they applying it? How are they implementing it? There are so many reasons, that we have to be looking at this particular school, that has been in existence since the 90s, and we have to bring it to book. But as we know, they are just part of the drama, and nobody, they are just going to get a pat on the back and say, yeah, they quickly returned it. So there should be more questions than answers on American International School in itself. And we need to go back and start looking at who were the people involved, because that is a school that is deeply connected to the children of the elites, most of them, have their children there. They have a long waiting list and what have not, but I'm not going to tell that story here. Everybody knows that, and there's a lot of gatekeeping, that is not for everybody. So Yaya Bello getting involved and then quickly collecting that humongous amount of money is wrong for a school. I don't know the Board of Governors or who owns them, but it tells you that they are part of the corrupt system of Nigeria, and it should not be. But it tells you the whole thing back to our media trial is just part of a media trial, and We tend to enjoy the media trial and the entertainment behind it than the real consequences or the real effects that it's having in society. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Aminu. Now on to our final topic, which is the sad news. It's reported that in Rivers State, near the Eleme petrochemical site, we don't even know the number, but the news reports are saying scores of people have been killed. There was a petrol tanker explosion. Apparently, one tanker crashed into the other, and it was along the east-west road that is still under construction. And because there was a lot of traffic there, the fire spread and scores of people are feared dead. So first to Phoenix, why don't we even know how many people are dead? Is this normal? And it's reported in some newspapers, but it doesn't seem to be getting the level of national attention that you'd expect this sort of tragedy to be getting. So what is going on, Phoenix?
I mean, to your point, we're seeing conflicting reports, right? Some not so clear, some coming out and saying six people and scores injured, which seems strange to me. It seems like a low number to me, given the kind of carnage that was reported. May the souls of those lost rest in peace, and my condolences to their families. But again, it just shows the dysfunction that we have. That one, the emergency services don't have a strong enough procedure to have shown up and been able to, take control of the scene and identify victims. The fact that it happened at all and the way that it's been reported as what caused it, it's a road that is under construction, and what was mentioned by the Federal Road Safety Corps leader there, who gave the report, said that there were two trucks that were vying for a narrow space, collided, and that led to the puncturing of the one carrying the tanker. And before you knew it, explosion, fire, and a lot of destruction, a lot of vehicles burned, and all that. So there's lots to unpack. There's the fact that with a major road being constructed, people have come out, I mean, and said, well, they blame the construction company because there was no alternative route for people to go through. We also know, typical lawlessness of drivers, especially those who drive these heavy duty vehicles. But you don't, I always say that you don't bank on people to do the right thing. The reason why we have a government is to ensure that we all behave in a civilized manner, which saves lives and property and enables, good outcomes for everyone. So in that kind of a scenario, with a road that way, what you should have then done is to make sure that there are traffic wardens. If you're not even going to be able to use traffic lights or whatever, who would ensure smooth flow of traffic? Who, if they were there, would obviously, I mean, the truck drivers would probably behave themselves better and not be trying to squeeze into a place that will have led to such an incident. So, again, for me, I pick on the dysfunction of the preventive side that could have, stopped this tragedy from happening. And you don't see the state actors taking ownership or accountability for this. So the governor of Rivers State's Fubara statement, he was more interested in blaming the drivers and than taking responsibility for not having a proper system in place to ensure that traffic rules are have followed. So I think this is just another evidence of the amount of work that is needed in Nigeria to turn this country away from dysfunction into a well-run country where things work and where lives and property can be secure, because you are enabling the right things to happen. This was certainly avoidable, and I only can hope that they learn their lessons and implement better processes and systems to safeguard things for the future.
Thank you, Phoenix. Dr. Aminu, one of the comments that were raised by people on social media is this East-West road is supposed to be a strategic road, but it has been ongoing for years because of a shortage of funding. And a number of people were angry because they said, look, if this road had been completed, this accident could have been avoided. And what seems to be annoying them the most is that whilst the government can't seem to be able to raise the financing to complete this road, they're building another so-called coastal road that they claim benefits Tinubu and Shaguri in Lagos. How do you respond to this, Dr. Aminu? Do you think these people have a point when they're complaining, or do you think it's just rumors that are not backed up by facts?
No, people have every point to make there. And let's be honest, whatever we're trying to make, whether it is Tinubu, Shaguri, none of them will be able to rule Nigeria if Nigeria is empty. If everybody dies in Nigeria, God forbid, you know, and may the soul of the departed rest in peace. But if everybody leaves the country, then they are not going to benefit. You know, they need people to work to pay their taxes for them to even rule over us. So they are right. And RCC that they've been talking about has been working at a very slow pace. It's wrong. But this tells you about our project or contract implementation and monitoring and evaluation system in the whole country, and how we allow these things to happen. You know, we end up putting the blame on a certain number of people. Now, let's go back to the Calabar Lagos Highway. You know, why do we actually need that? And if you calculate the amount of money, 4 billion naira per kilometer, that they are talking about, I think at one point, the Minister of Works was calculating it to be 15.1 trillion naira, more than half our annual budget, you know. That will complete the whole inland roads, you know, not the coastal roads, you know, that we need, you know, to move around back and forth. Probably they will even add addition of, what do you call it, rail lines, you know, to link up some places. So why do we need, I know it's a vanity project, you know, people love to hear some fancy flowery words, you know, coastal roads that take you there and take you there. But what is happening with the main inland roads, you know, that we are, that we should be working about? That is what I wrote about last week, or I think, yeah, a week ago, you know, regarding this, because people are actually looking out for this kind of roads. This is what will benefit the lives of the people, and that is why they are talking about it. You know, the Nigerian man does not really want much. They just want the basics. You know, they just want the government to make life easy for them. Good governance, as Phoenix will say. You know, this is what they just want, and that is part of good governance. You know, give them some basics, you know, create those link roads, you know, that it's not going to create this kind of disaster. You know, how many cars were burnt, you know, apart from the lives that were lost? 60 car vehicles were burnt, you know. No, I do not think insurance are going to pay back. That is, we are talking about, if they are not owned by a kind of corporation, that is the beginning of abject poverty of those car owners, because they will never get it back. And we are, instead of them to think of how to prevent the next ones, no, they are already concentrating on Tinubu's best friend of Chowdhury. How old is he? About 100 years or 120, And what is he even going to do with that? I agree. Okay, he needs to create a generation of billionaires, but why don't you give him, if he follows the proper due contract, why don't you tell him to apply to do the, I mean, to follow, to complete that, those kind of projects within the mainlands, not on the coastal highways. Give him those kind of contracts. As long as he's able to do it, he can do it. He has the capacity and the pedigree. Give it to him, and he passes the due process. Give it to him. Let him become, let him create the billions within that. And that will is what is going to create benefits and impact and grow the economy for us. Not the coastal highways. Coastal highway is not going to grow the economy. We've already had people talking about it, crying, they are demolishing our houses, and what is going to happen is it is just lawyers that are just going to be benefiting from that, and the government, because many people will not get their money back or will not get compensation back, or until they go on to fight the government, and they may not even end up getting the value of their money there, I mean, their properties that has been demolished and is ongoing. So it's worrying that this government is completely out of touch and too greedy to think of the benefits that the poor man will get. And this is free advice for them. I usually don't give them free advice, but if they could just find a way that they will benefit, I mean, create projects that will benefit the masses, they could equally make billions, the billions that they are thinking of making, and at the same time win the next election. We won't be here talking about them, criticizing them if they are actually working. But besides, I don't want them to benefit. I don't want them to succeed. So I'm not going to pray for them to succeed. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Aminu. The final question on this topic is to Phoenix. Phoenix, what about the state governor? He gets a security vote from the federal government as part of his federal allocations. And therefore, why don't we have responsive? Because according to his story, he said somebody rang him to tell him about the fire. Then he rang the security services and told them that they had to go there and investigate. But surely, with all the money a state like River State receives, the government doesn't need to be called. Shouldn't they have an established fire service alongside other search and rescue services that members of the public can ring and then they can respond and deal with these issues, Phoenix?
Absolutely, they should. They should have their own emergency support system. They should have, and this is River State we're talking about. I mean, this is one of the richest states in the country. And as I was saying recently on earlier, all of the state governors have been receiving much more money from FARC in recent times, so they have no business not being able to set up some of this basic response type architecture to which enables them to save lives and bring things under control. I mean, for me, as far as I'm concerned, I put the blame squarely in the hands of government. Again, I've talked about the dysfunction that leads to all of these things and all things that could have been done to avoid this. It's the state governor's job to make sure that lives and property in his state are secure, and he needs to be held accountable for this, and he needs to step up to the plate and make sure that the things that would ensure this doesn't happen again do not happen. He has more than enough resources at his disposal to ensure that these kinds of areas where there's construction, these kinds of places where there could be hazards are correctly secured. And the right rules are followed, to prevent. And even if something is going to happen, you should make sure your emergency services are top-notch that can respond adequately. This is a failure of government. There's no doubt about it in my mind. And Governor Fubara needs to take a hard look at himself, and the people need to hold him accountable so he understands that it's not just issuing, not about issuing platitudes or trying to deflect on others. This is why they put you in office, to step up and to make sure that things are done properly.
Thank you, Phoenix. But our time is up. So, first of all, thank you, Dr. Aminu, for taking time out of your busy schedule to be here. Thank you, Phoenix, for co-hosting. And last but not the least, I must say thank you to our listeners for being loyal and giving us helpful feedback. Well, I thought I should let you know I'm going to be traveling next week for work. I'm probably going to be in maybe somewhere in San Diego. I'm going to be in San Diego next Sunday, so we might not be able to record. I'm giving you guys advance notice, so. So I'm not accused of not recording the podcast. Well, yes, so hopefully we'll be here next week, but we'll be back the following week. So until same time, I'd say the next 2 weeks, I say have a fantastic 14 days. So farewell, everyone.
Thanks, Michael, and thanks, Aminu.
Thank
And
you all.
thanks, listeners. Have a great week ahead.
Have a good weekend. Thank you all.